Good afternoon. This is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, November 26th, 2019, at 6 minutes after 12. Ahead this afternoon, a new report about per capita income in Northwest Arkansas places the region pretty high on a national list. What does that mean, and what can we glean from that statistic? Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek talks about the report with Mervyn Jemiraj, the director of the University of Arkansas Center for Business and Economic Research. That's in our second half hour today. Later this afternoon on 91.3 on NPR's Here and Now, in her widely adapted Thanksgiving play, playwright Larissa Fasthorse takes on some of the myths we tell ourselves about Thanksgiving. A conversation with her, the latest news, and more on Here and Now from 1 to 3 this afternoon on 91.3 KUAF. And a reminder, it's that time of year again. Our annual Ozarks at Large Christmas show is Wednesday night, December 4th, at the Fayetteville Public Library. We'll have musical performances by Dandelion Heart, John Henry, and the St. Paul's Episcopal Church Children's Choir. Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette will also read Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's all free. And we'll collect non-perishable items for our annual Giving Tree initiative, benefiting Antioch for Youth and Families in Fort Smith. The show begins at 6:30, Wednesday night, December 4th. We hope to see you there. And the Fayetteville Public Library will host another Schools Out movie for free tomorrow afternoon, beginning at 1. This time, it's the live-action update of Aladdin. Then, something different tonight. The Holler in downtown Bentonville will host a trivia contest, Geeks Who Drink. There will be 8 rounds, and teams are limited to 6 players each. Questions will begin at 7. This is Ozarks at Large. Ben Corbett, an assistant professor of voice and speech in the University of Arkansas's theater department, is directing the new Arkansas Accent and Dialect Project. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, he's seeking diverse native Arkansan research subjects of all ages and backgrounds to interview on the record.
My name is Ben Corbett. I'm a designated Linklater voice teacher and a certified Koliani speech instructor. I'm an assistant professor of voice and acting at the University of Arkansas, and I am new to this area. I just started back in August.
A Tulsa, Oklahoma native, Ben Corbett has several degrees in drama. He's taught at a half dozen colleges and universities. His vocal coaching credits include both Shakespearean and contemporary theater across the country. And at the University of Arkansas, where he's now teaching, he's initiated research based on an affinity he's developing for the Arkansas Brogue.
So I decided to initiate the Arkansas Accent Project so I would learn about the people of this area.
Corbett is keenly interested in regional dialects and accents, how they evolve, how they're disrupted, and how to preserve them.
Because we're living in the time of Facebook, the time of YouTube, the time of phones, especially the time of earbuds, I find that our accents are becoming all the same, because we have such immediate access from accents across the country. And so I find individual regional accents, people are either endeavoring to drop or they're not being given them.
In late October, Corbett issued a press release asking Native Arkansans of all ethnicities and cultures to come by and visit with him as research subjects on the record. So far, 24 have responded.
What I'm doing is, my thought is, first off, I'd like to interview as many different people as I can. It'll be an ongoing project, and archive them along with the International Dialects of English Archive.
He picked the International Dialects of English Archive as a repository created in 1998. It's the first digital online archive of primary source recordings of English language dialects and accents from around the world. The free website features over 1,500 samples from 100 countries and territories.
So that these can be maintained and also analyzed with my scholarly commentary about vowels and consonants and diphthongs and just where the person is.
He's especially seeking culturally and ethnically diverse subjects, aiming for one person from each of Arkansas's 75 counties.
It may not be an Arkansas accent that I recognize, But that doesn't mean it's not a native Arkansas accent.
And Corbett is documenting certain regional distinctions.
For example, I know a strong accent with how they say the word Arkansas. If I end that word Arkansas with the vowels in father, the accent tends to be relatively light, Arkansas. But for people with stronger accents, they turn that vowel, that ah, into aw, as in the word fall, ball. So there's Arkansas, but there's Arkansas. And when I hear Arkansas, again, which is fine, I know that I am ready for a very authentic, strong Arkansas accent.
Corbett's findings will contribute to a growing body of linguistic research, which is informing other fields, for example, psychology, philosophy, education, language teaching, sociology, anthropology, computer science, even artificial intelligence. But he, being an actor, wants to also apply it creatively.
I'd like to present my research like that, the Voice and Speech Trainer Association, to let the country, the world know, hey, this is what's going on in this part of America. But I know I want to turn it into some kind of theatrical event.
And Corbett seeks to illuminate the Southern drawl.
Southerners tend to lengthen their vowels. And also they tend, I'm speaking very broadly, to drop the second vowel in a diphthong. By the way, the diphthong is two vowels together to make one vowel, like I, oi, o. So, for example, hi comes ha, plain, plain, toy, toy. And that, even our ears pick, we go, you're from the South, because Southerners are used to dropping that second vowel. Also, sometimes Southerners lengthen one vowel so much, which is fine, that they'll actually add a y sound in the middle of it called a yod. So cans, like cans of beans, cans can become cans or cayens. It's that lengthening that I think makes a recognizable Southern accent.
As for Corbett's native Oklahoma accent?
I can let my soft palate flatten. And I start getting Oklahoma twang. This starts to become Oklahoma cowboy. Hey, how are you? What's going on? Now, this I started to get into the Southern Oklahoma where both my family's from. This isn't quite Eastern Oklahoma. But if I relax that and let my jaw relax, I will start to get an Eastern Oklahoma accent. It means the soft palate becomes more flat. And when the soft palate becomes more flat, vibrations go into my nose. And you get the archetypal cowboy accent. Can you hear me do it? However, when I let my soft palate fly up, maybe suggest the Ozark Hills, but the back of my tongue comes up, then we start getting into something more here. Hey, how are you? What's going on? And you don't get the shh, the, hey, what's going on? It's not as nasal. It's just a little bit more tight. It's a little bit more airy, and it's also there's a little bit more cloud cover in my accent. Can you hear that? Because you are used to the mountains, and I'm used to the flat country. Can you hear that difference? The Arkansas accent in general, I'm finding it, is not really, at least in Northwest Arkansas, it's not really a twang. And that's what I'm finding out so far.
Corbett welcomes all queries about his project.
You may email me at bensmith, bensmith, at uark.edu. I am in Kemble Hall. I'm on the sixth floor. Which is where the main theater office is. It's office 623. It helps if you email me and we set a time ahead first. So help. Fridays are best for me, and we can talk.
The Arkansas Accent and Dialect Project, which began in August, has no schedule end date for now. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
University of Arkansas officials continue to monitor cases of mumps on campus. University health officials say 9 cases have been confirmed through the fall semester, though additional cases are being investigated. An accounting from the Pat Walker Health Center on campus reports only about 400 students have been identified as not having required vaccinations for protection against mumps. Those students, as well as others who may have been exposed, have received additional communication and directives from the health center on campus or the University of Arkansas Department of Health. Yesterday afternoon, Jim Coleman, Provost and Executive Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, released an outline of how instructors should operate if a student in class is diagnosed with mumps. University protocol includes a notification of instructors of the diagnosis, and instructors are advised to prepare and/or provide alternative methods of teaching and learning for the students who may need to be excluded from class or class activities. The Arkansas Democratic Party will likely not field a candidate for the United States Senate in opposition to incumbent Tom Cotton in 2020. The Democratic Party State Chair, Michael John Gray, says there is likely not a path for the party to have a nominee after Josh Mahoney dropped out of the race just hours after the filing period for candidates closed earlier this month. Mahoney has cited a family health issue through social media outlets. Speaking with reporters yesterday, Gray said he doesn't see a way for a new candidate to appear on the ballot.
We are bound by statute. And absent any other information provided that we have not been provided, we don't see that there's a decision that the Democratic Party can make other than to follow the statutory guidelines that there is no evidence of an issue that meets those standards to replace the candidate.
Gray says Mahoney has not spoken with him or party leadership regarding his withdrawal beyond saying it was due to a family health issue. The state Republican Party had threatened to file a complaint against Mahoney with the Federal Election Commission over errors on campaign filings and later threatened legal action if Democrats attempted to replace Mahoney in the race. Gray says without more information or specifics about that health concern, it will be difficult for the Democratic Party to be able to have a candidate for the race in 2020. There will be candidates for the Arkansas Supreme Court on the 2020 ballot, and none of them will be identified by party. The races for the state's high court are nonpartisan, at least officially. Ahead on today's show, John Brumma, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, says he's not buying the idea the races are nonpartisan.
But it is a charade, and I don't like charades. Let's just let them run as Republican or Democrat if that's what we're going to do.
John Brumma discusses the state of state Supreme Court races ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
Walton Arts Center welcomes comedic entertainer, writer, and political satirist Randy Rainbow December 6th at 7:30. His popular YouTube series, The Randy Rainbow Show, is viewed by millions across all social media and digital platforms. WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets. Support comes from Scott Family Amazium, offering 2020 membership for holiday gift giving. Members enjoy free admission, early registration, and access to members-only events, plus membership access to over 300 museums and science centers across the United States. Amazium.org for more.
It's 18 minutes after 12. This is Ozarks at Large. A Springdale teacher has launched the country's first Future Farmers of America chapter at an online school. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda recently met with the 23-year-old instructor to learn how FFA is being incorporated at Arkansas Virtual Academy, and Antoinette brings us this report.
Tabitha Hudspeth's path to becoming a teacher started in high school, where she helped teach some agriculture classes and was president of her local FFA chapter.
When I graduated, I realized that I just love the connection that I get to make with kids and getting to see them grow, especially in kind of the agriculture world, which is really where my passion lies, was something that I just knew I had to do. And so I immediately went into ag education.
Hudspeth says her passion comes from the fact that agriculture affects everyone.
I remember so many times sitting in junior high and in high school and learning things like the Pythagorean theorem or the quadratic formula and thinking, when am I ever going to use this again? And granted, sometimes I do, but it's not very often. But every one of my students plays a role in agriculture, and it's so vastly different. And that's what I always tell them is, you know, you don't have to go be a farmer. You don't even have to grow a garden in your backyard. If you're eating food, you're a consumer, and you're involved in agriculture, and you need to be able to have a knowledge of it.
In 2018, Hudspeth began working at Arkansas Virtual Academy, a public charter school that offers online courses for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. She says the school's agriculture program has grown exponentially. Last year, ARVA offered two ag classes, and Hudspeth had around 84 students. This year, she has 164 students and teaches four of the five ag classes offered by the school. Hudspeth says her interest in starting an FFA chapter stems from the three-circle model used in agriculture education.
So to have full-rounded agriculture education, we expect students to have three different components. So one of them is classroom instruction. So that's what I just talked about, all those courses that I'm teaching. One of them is what we call SAEs, which is supervised agriculture experiences. That's where students are going out and getting hands-on experience, whether that is interning with different places, whether that's working for maybe their parents or a friend, or for some of them, that's being an entrepreneur and going out and starting their own business. And then the third part of it is FFA. So the interesting thing about the National FFA organization is, although we are a club, we're what we consider an intracurricular activity instead of an extracurricular activity, because all of the things that my students are competing in FFA are directly tied to the coursework that they're doing right now.
Tabitha Hudspeth says they officially got their charter in October 2018, and instead of competing in the spring, she spent that time planning with her students about what might work for them. Now she meets with her four officers once a week, and the chapter as a whole meets twice a month. Teams in this FFA chapter receive training like they would in a regular chapter. The difference is they don't meet in person.
Typically, what I would do in a brick and mortar and in my student teaching is I would have practice after school. And so when I student taught, I trained five teams. And so I trained two teams on Mondays, and then I trained a team after school Tuesday through Thursday. And so we would train for anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. So my students train just like that, but we're in a Zoom session. And so it's basically like FaceTime. It's like a video conference call. I can see them, they can see me, I share my screen. We use Quizlet a lot, we use a lot of PowerPoints. But the really cool thing about this that I never thought about until we really got into it is we record all of our practice sessions.
So now the recording can be sent to a student who missed a training, or it can be used by someone wanting to refresh themselves on the material in preparation for competition. One of the benefits of using digital platforms like Zoom, Hudspeth says, is students have the flexibility to be able to learn and still participate in extra activities.
So, for example, my vice president has shown, as of State Fair, and this was back in October, as of State Fair, that was their 52nd show of this show season. In a brick and mortar, they would never have been able to do that. She would have been considered truant for missing too many days, even though it was for a livestock show, because she never would have been in class. But with Arkansas Virtual Academy, she can be in the car on a hotspot. She can be out at the fairgrounds. And that's what her mom told me, is she said, you know, should we would not be able to do what we do if it wasn't for the flexibility that ARVA gives us.
Running a digital chapter of FFA isn't without its challenges, though.
There's definitely been some bumps in the roads where we've had to figure out, you know, how does this work? Just the other day, we were talking about transportation because we don't have a bus. And so I had students that said, you know, my parents can't take off a bunch of different days of work to be able to take me to these competitions, but we don't have a bus to take, you know, what do we do? And so we, you know, had to do some brainstorming and had to figure some things out and talk to some parents, and we're able to get some things worked out. But that's been, that's just one example of something that happens over and over and over again.
Another issue is figuring out how to give students more hands-on experience.
One of the things that we've talked about is there's a lot of labs, especially in like veterinary science, for example. There's a lot of labs that I got to do as a student that my students don't get to do. And so one of the ideas that we've been talking about is possibly sending out lab kits. And so making lab kits that would then be mailed to a student's home, similar to a lab kit that you would buy as a college student and then bring to your lab class. And so like that's been one idea that we've had, but figuring out, you know, where do you get funding for that? How do you put those together? Who puts those together, and different things like that. But trying to figure out, like I said, how do we make those opportunities still available to my students, but also make it in a safe manner.
While it's been an interesting journey for this young teacher, she's enjoying figuring it all out.
I love it. I never in a million years would have imagined that this is where I would be. And I was actually just talking to a friend the other day, and I said, you know, I said, if you had asked me in May of 2018, about a month before I started here, what are you going to do? I would have said, I have no idea. You know, I guess I'm going to go get a teaching job. But to look back and see how I ended up here, it's so crazy, but I'm so thankful for it. It has stretched me as a teacher more than I ever could have imagined.
Since starting the first FFA chapter at an online school, Tabitha Hudspeth says she's been able to work with two other schools who have been granted a charter and knows of two others that are in the works. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
A recent graduate from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith will deliver next month's fall commencement at UAFS. Tony Jones, class of 2016, will give the address at the UAFS graduation ceremonies Saturday, December 14th, beginning at 10 a.m. in the Stubblefield Center. Jones is in his final year at the University of Arkansas School of Law, where this year he was selected by Dean Margaret E. Sova McCabe to be the school's inaugural pro bono fellow for his commitment to pro bono service. Jones also serves as Honor Council Chair, is a member of the Black Law Student Association, and works as a legal clerk at the Washington County Public Defender's Office. The fall commencement ceremony will honor more than 500 students completing graduation requirements during the second summer and fall semesters. Lake Dardanelle State Park is being recognized as the Region 1 Park of the Year in Arkansas. In a press release yesterday honoring the park and its staff, the Arkansas Department of Parks, Heritage, and Tourism notes Lake Dardanelle State Park excelled in resource management, interpretive programming, and serving visitors despite this year's record flooding of the Arkansas River. Park staff planted 11 Ozark chinkapin trees in the park in cooperation with the Ozark Chinkapin Foundation. Additionally, Lake Dardanelle State Park interpreter Sasha Bowles heads up the Arkansas Monarch and Pollinator Partnership for Arkansas State Parks, and Bowles was also named Boaters Education Instructor of the Year by Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. And later this week, it's Green Friday at Lake Dardanelle State Park. There will be come-and-go activity stations in the Visitor Center, and activities are set for 10 to 3 Friday. Activity stations will be dedicated to fish, birds, animal tracks, and leave no trace. For more information about Green Friday activities throughout the state, you can go to ArkansasStateParks.com. And this week, Ozark Regional Transit, continuing its tradition of no-fare holiday weeks, ORT is offering free fare days throughout the week, though the service is closed Thursday for Thanksgiving. Bus fare on the other days for all fixed route transit buses will be free of charge.
You are listening to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. The United States, Britain, China, France, and Russia are the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. The UN was founded with the assumption that these five permanent members would come together in the face of threats to international order. This soon proved illusory when the Cold War between the Western democracies and the Soviet Union broke out in the late 1940s. Continuing political divisions among the Security Council's permanent members often have compromised its effectiveness. Other international organizations have emerged since the end of World War II. And the United States is a member of many, including the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which focuses on regional security in Europe. The United States also plays an active role in organizations such as the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, and the World Bank. That's all for today's podcast, 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
And the theme music for 60 Second Civics provided by Cheryl B. Engelhart. You can find her online at cbemusic.com. That song featured is Cheryl's Complacent. You can find that on Apple Music along with the rest of her music. 60 Second Civics, part of Ozarks at Large and KUAF's participation in the Purple Project for Democracy. You can learn more at purplefordemocracy.org. This is Ozarks at Large. We've learned that some federal investigations lead to unexpected places. An inquiry into Whitewater in Arkansas eventually led to an impeachment of President Bill Clinton regarding matters far different than the original topic. A break into a hotel in Washington, D.C. eventually led to the revelation of secret tapes originating in the Nixon White House. And along the way, many other subplots and characters become part of the story, even if only for a brief matter of time. This weekend, an Arkansas figure became the latest name to figure in some small way in the Ukraine Biden quid pro quo impeachment story currently in the spotlight. Roby Rock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about this latest development.
Over the weekend, Lindsey Graham is working on something to try to keep alive the Biden element of Ukraine, to try to change the subject to that. He got a public letter from Giuliani saying there is a well-respected former U.S. attorney who has some information on this. Talking Points Memo, a left-leaning news-gathering organization, happened to have been in Little Rock or calling around Little Rock 2 or 3 weeks ago developing a story about Bud. They knew to whom Giuliani was referring, so they went ahead and broke their story at 1:05 p.m. on Sunday, a strange place for it to, strange time. The story is basically this. In September of last year, September of 2018, for one reason or another,
Bud Cummins was approached by two intermediaries for the Prosecutor General of Ukraine, who wanted his help in getting America interested in allegations of scandal involving the Bidens, that Hunter Biden was taking bribes through this gas company to influence John Kerry and his father responded to the influence by calling for the resignation of the prosecutor investigating the gas company. The things we all know and have been largely discredited. Bud Cummins took that information and emailed it to the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York in Manhattan. Never heard anything back. Upshot of it is, the former U.S. Attorney and leading Trump supporter in Arkansas, Bud Cummins, who we all know, is suddenly in this cast of characters, either as sort of an innocent bit player who was just passing something on, or he's the first American ever to spread in America the largely discredited allegations which are now at the heart of the likely impeachment of the president. And Bud was a little nonplussed by the whole thing when I talked to him. He said, and there'll be eye rolls at this, he said, hey, I'd like to think that I would have done the same thing, just pass on information. I don't know if it was against Donald Trump Jr.
Well, and we see the congressional inquiries, too, now. You mentioned Lindsey Graham kind of chasing something on this Biden thing. Well, why answer this question for me? If Biden was so problematic, why did it not become an issue until after the Republicans had control of the House and the Senate?
Biden was not problematic. Here's the thing. Hunter Biden may be no account. He may be an ethical wasteland. He may have cashed in on his father's being the vice president. It has been well established that Joe Biden had nothing to do with that other than, as he says, saying to his son, I hope you know what you're doing in Ukraine with this gas company. And his son said, trust me, Dad, I do. Well, but otherwise, Biden was in Ukraine. And he has expressed coordinated American policy through the State Department and the administration that this prosecutor is corrupt and you need to get rid of him. Everybody has concluded Joe was not in on any sort of conspiracy. He was expressing Obama's view, Kerry's view, the Secretary of State's view, and an American view that was shared at the time by Republicans in the Congress. But now that this noose tightens a little bit on their president, they're going to revive that and say the real scandal here is the Bidens. So that's what that's all about.
You had a column on nonpartisan judges.
Yeah.
This kind of is a long-running exercise that you have had, calling for merit selection,
yes,
I think is what you would prefer, versus us electing our judges, which I don't know if the electorate is ready turn that over. So. Tell me a little bit about your current issue with nonpartisanship in judges.
First of all, merit selection would be, let me explain, people who want to be on the Supreme Court when a vacancy, Arkansas Supreme Court, for example, when a vacancy arises, and that's what I'm talking about, not all judges, but Arkansas Supreme Court, would make that interest known, and an elite bar committee or legal committee would screen them and rank them as highly favorable or favorable, however that would work, and then then forward the acceptable nominees to the governor, who would make the nomination, and then it would be confirmed by the Senate. And then, after serving an eight-year term, that Supreme Court member would stand, it's called a Missouri plan, would stand for revalidation by the voters, and if he didn't get a majority running against himself or herself, then there would be a new vacancy, and you'd fill them that way. I think that's a lot better. I think this idea of partisan judgeships is the biggest ridiculous...
Nonpartisan.
Yep. Is the biggest charade in Washington, too, by an appointment system, which has been wholly politicized, as the Kavanaugh thing showed. But what set me off this time was our local Trumpian celebrity in residence, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's going around to well-attended... big crowds of Republican gatherings around the state. And at Hot Springs, at one of them, she got up and said, the two votes you really need to make, and this is a Republican gathering, are for Donald Trump and for Barbara Webb, the wife of the state Republican chairman who is running for the Supreme Court. Hey, let's just drop this. This is just classic case of how it's a partisan election. She is running under a Trumpian Sanders state Republican unstated banner, but which is a clear banner if unstated. And I thought Sarah made it pretty clear, so it set me off. Nothing's going to come of this. Barbara Webb is probably going to win because this is a Republican state, and she's got the Republican unstated, well understood banner. But it is a charade, and I don't like charades. Let's just let them run as Republican or Democrat if that's what we're going to do. But better yet, maybe someday we can think of a way to get our Supreme Court's seats filled without this kind of nonsense. We're getting ready to go through a primary season when these judicial candidates are on the ballot. As somebody said to me the other day, the main place you go to be heard during the primary season is Democrat and Republican Party functions. So here are these judges for nonpartisan elections going to these. It's an absurd system, in my opinion.
You write more about it, John Brummett. Well, and we will read more about it. And I think you will eventually sway public opinion to your side.
No, I'll be long gone, but it may happen.
Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics, and John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, record their conversations at KATV Studios in Little Rock. You can hear more from this week's discussion, including how John Brummett says he crushed the hopes of some Northwest Arkansas senior Democrats recently, at talkbusiness.net. And you can read John Brummett's columns in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and at arkansasonline.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. It's time for the annual KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway, your chance to win a gift from one of many generous underwriters. Participants include Walton Arts Center, Arcega's Coffee, Center Street Mercantile, and others. Winners announced December 13th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com to register.
This is Ozarks at Large. Data released this month by the United States Bureau of Economic Analysis shows the per capita personal income of Northwest Arkansas residents is among the highest in the nation. At over $65,000, the regional per capita personal income ranks 18th nationally. The national average is about $54,500. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Mervyn Jebaraj, director for the Center for Business and Economic Research in the Sam Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas, about what this metric can and cannot tell us about the region.
Let's just start by talking about what per capita personal income is and, you know, how does it compare to other metrics of success of a certain region?
So per capita personal income is sort of just giving you an average of how much income each person has in Northwest Arkansas. And so as such, it's somewhat a more crude measure of measuring people's well-being in the sense that you're just taking the total personal income in a region, which is wages, salaries, rents, dividends, and other interest-bearing income, income from the government in the form of Social Security or other welfare benefits, add all that up, divide by the total population, that's per capita personal income. So it tends to be very crude, a very crude measure of how a region's performing. And so, you know, in that sense, people use it. It's still interesting to look at personal income as a whole, to look at what components of personal income are growing. And in Northwest Arkansas, actually, you know, all the components in personal income are actually growing. So even though some components make up a bigger chunk of it than others, across the board, personal income in Northwest Arkansas is going up, whether that's coming from wages and salaries or rents, dividends, interest.
So how does it compare to the per capita personal income this year compared to a decade ago, and I'm assuming it's grown.
Right.
So what's attributing to that growth that we're seeing?
So because per capita personal income takes in wages, salaries, which have gone up significantly from a decade ago, so it's, you know, per capita personal income has grown quite a bit since, you know, at least 10 years ago. I think we were about 40,000 something back then. We're about 65 or so thousand now, so that's, you know, a significant growth in per capita personal income. So wages and salaries have gone up, that contributes a big portion of it, and then rents, dividends, and interest income has gone up too, and that means that people, whatever interest-bearing things they have or dividends from stocks that they own, those have all gone up as well in the same time period. So all of those have gone up. But, you know, if you were to compare that to some better measure of economic well-being, median household income, is something that everybody uses to do that. That has also gone up quite significantly over the last 10 years. We're currently about, I think, $57,000 or $58,000 as the median household income, which is about $10,000 bigger than the rest of the state.
The overall recruitment, too, that's happened by the big three companies, Walmart, J.B. Hunt, Tyson, has that contributed in any way in this growth that we're seeing and sort of being up in the rankings nationally?
So definitely, you know, a lot of the employment growth that we've seen in Northwest Arkansas tends to be in a category called professional business services, and that's essentially a lot of technical jobs, lawyers, accountants, engineers, those types of things, and then management of companies. So you're talking about the entire supplier community, et cetera, in Northwest Arkansas. And then there is a somewhat lower wage portion to professional business services too, which is temp jobs. And so, but that sector has grown significantly in Northwest Arkansas over the last 10 years. You know, depending on when you look at it, that might make up about half of all the job growth, you know, in some years in Northwest Arkansas. So it's a high-paying sector. A lot of jobs have been added in that particular sector, and so it's not a surprise to then see per capita personal income going up because wages and salaries are a part of that, and also median household income went up during the same time quite significantly, also because people's, you know, how much they make at their jobs has gone up.
And I don't know if you're able to, if these figures are able to point to any issues, I guess, with so many newcomers coming in and sort of the people who have historically lived in Northwest Arkansas. Is there anything to read from these figures about maybe that sector getting left behind or getting left out of that growth?
So, you know, I think that the reason why you see a lot of people moving in is that there's just quite a significant demand for employment here in Northwest Arkansas. There are a lot of jobs available. And I think employers in general will hire wherever they can to fill those jobs. So if people have the right qualifications for those jobs, and these tend to be jobs that require a college degree, maybe even an advanced degree, to make some of the salaries that these jobs provide. If, you know, residents of Northwest Arkansas that have always lived here don't have those qualifications, then it's harder for them to break into that market. And that's why you see employers recruiting outside the market. So, you know, typically you'd want to recruit in the cheapest place you can, which is at home, and you only go outside of your home if you can't find what you need here.
What kind of information gets lost in looking at something like an area's per capita personal income? What can you not see from that number?
So I think just because, you know, it is an average, it includes all the income that really wealthy people have and, you know, people that are not wealthy have as well. So it is, like I said, a very crude measure. So, you know, something that you would look at is median household income, how that performs. And that's gone up about 4% or so every year over the last 10 years. So that's, you know, significant growth in how the median household in Northwest Arkansas is doing. And that tells you that the median household is about $58,000 in Northwest Arkansas. It means half the people are making less than that and half the people are making more than that in Northwest Arkansas. That is still lower than the national median household income, but it's significantly higher than the rest of the state. So that is the metric I would use. Poverty rate is a metric I would use. Again, the poverty rate in Northwest Arkansas is, I think, around 14%. Again, lower than the rest of the state. Tends to be a little bit higher in Northwest Arkansas because you have a significantly large student population here in Northwest Arkansas. And their measure, you know, shows the median household income being fairly low, even though they, you know, are using someone else's income and not their own right now.
So why is it worthwhile to perhaps still measure per capita personal income? And is it something that people who are looking to establish companies here or move here, is this something people are looking at?
I mean, I think it gives you a lot of data. So per capita personal income actually breaks down your income based on where you receive it from, which industries are providing it. So it has a lot of data that you can use that industries would be used, you know, people that are interested in marketing. So it tells you how many people are receiving Social Security income. So it gives you an idea of, you know, what the demand for that market would be, how many people are getting rents and proprietor's income. So it gets you an idea. And then how many people are receiving wages and salaries and what the, you know, average is in that perspective. So it's a standardized measure. You can compare that to other regions, since I make comparisons on that front as well. So, you know, I think the overall measure of per capita personal income is fairly crude, but the data that it provides by each component of what makes per capita personal income is interesting data to look at.
So this one is for Kyle, mostly. So there were other metro areas that obviously had a much higher per capita personal income: Boston, New York, San Francisco. Those are kind of obvious, but Midland, Texas was in the number one spot with $122,000. Any idea why their per capita personal income is so high?
So, you know, if you think about on a country basis, countries that have the highest per capita personal income or GDP per capita tend to be places that produce oil. Very low population, very expensive product that they're putting out. So you take the expensive product that they're putting out and divide it by the very low population, you get a ridiculously high per capita personal income or GDP per capita. So that's really where that stuff comes from.
Thank you very much for speaking with us.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Mervyn Jebaraj, the director for the Center for Business and Economic Research in the Sam Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics also released a report this month that shows Benton County saw the highest wage growth of any county in the nation. The average worker in the county earned more than 16% more in June 2019 than the same month in 2018. Meanwhile, wages in Washington County grew 4% over the year.
It's that time of year again. Our annual Christmas show is Wednesday, December 4th at the Fayetteville Public Library. We'll have musical performances by Dandelion Heart, John Henry, and the St. Paul's Episcopal Church Children's Choir. We'll also hear a reading of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Admission is free, and we'll be collecting non-perishable food items for our annual Giving Tree initiative. Donations will benefit Antioch for Youth and Family in Fort Smith. The show starts at 6:30. Hope to see you there.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. Welcome back.
Hi, Kyle. You know, we were both brought up speaking English.
Yes.
And both of us had people who corrected us when we misspoke that language. It's my mother, mostly. Who was it with you?
Oh, teachers and my mother, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for those who learn English as a second language, they can be excused for being confused. The website Bored Panda recently gave us some examples to make that clear. For instance, writers write.
Right.
But fingers don't fing.
True, true.
And grocers don't gross.
True.
The English language has lots of nuances, with words being borrowed from Latin and Greek, or the fact that some words had their origins lost, or they ceased to be used in spoken language. So let's see if you can figure out the confusion experienced by those who approach our language.
Okay.
So what's the commonly understood parallel to a body's fingers?
Parallel to one's fingers,
mm-hmm.
that also on the body?
Mm-hmm.
Like the toes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Okay. Right. So what do you call the very end of your fingers?
Fingertips.
Right. And your toes?
I don't call the ends of my toes anything, do I?
You don't call them toe tips,
no.
Do you?
No.
But what do you call it when you move quietly through a room?
I tiptoe.
Yeah.
But I never tip finger. No,
exactly.
Right? Interesting.
And while we're talking about body parts.
Yes.
Why does my nose run and my feet smell?
Yeah, I know. Right.
You heard that one.
Back in an old Mad magazine.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, Kyle, what is a suffix?
It's a part of a word that goes at the end.
Yeah.
Like scientist, ist is the suffix.
Yeah, right. And usually the changes to the base word maintain the same meaning or mood, like scientists study science.
Right,
right.
Right.
But let's talk about horror.
Okay.
So if you add the suffix ible, you get what?
Horrible.
Mm-hmm. And if you add the suffix ick.
Horrific?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So those are all words expressing something bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A similar word is terror.
Yes.
Let's take that through the same
all
suffixes.
Right.
Ible.
Terrible.
Ick.
Terrific. That suddenly becomes not terrible
not
at all.
Not consistent at all, is
right.
it? This comparison made me want to see what the difference between the base word is. Terror is usually described as a feeling of dread or anticipation that precedes the horrifying experience.
Right.
So you have terror about something that will happen. By contrast, horror is the feeling of revulsion that usually follows a frightening sound. Yeah, so that terrifies me in that I'm not sure what's going to happen, but when it happens, it horrifies me.
So in a way, terror is a prefix and horror is a suffix.
Pre and so, but not.
All
right, but let's continue with suffixes.
Okay.
What is a synonym, more or less, for the word jail?
Prison?
Yes. So let's add the suffix er to both words. Jail?
Jailer, it's the one who puts you in the jail.
Right. Prison?
Prisoner, it's the one who's put in jail.
Right.
Or prison.
So those are antonyms, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. No wonder people get confused.
Right.
As someone who's tried to learn another language too late in life, I tried to learn Spanish, I find that one of my problems in Spanish is which preposition to use. But in English, it can be just as confusing. Kyle, if you have chosen to ride the bus to work,
yes,
what preposition would you use here? I am blank the bus.
I am on the bus.
Yes, right. But actually, aren't you inside the bus?
Well, unless it's one of those double-deckers in London,
that's
yes.
That's right, exactly.
Absolutely.
But that's how we say it. We say we're on the bus.
I'm on the bus.
So it should follow logically that we are on the car.
No, we're in the car.
We're in the
car.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why bus? Why would bus?
I wonder if it has something to do with boarding it.
I bet it does because, but still, as passengers, we board cars, but it's not the same.
Sort of,
you're right.
But not as much.
I'm on the boat.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm on the plane.
Yeah.
So maybe it is boarding.
Yeah.
I'm
but
on the train.
Yeah, that's right. But you don't really board a boat, not like a ski boat.
Well, I mean, if you're going to Ellis Island or on a ferry,
canoe.
You know, I'm in the canoe.
You're in the canoe.
How about that? I think we've discovered something.
That could go through all kinds
of
things. It reminds me of the expressions I noticed a few years ago with the advent of VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
At home, we watch a movie.
Yeah.
But in the theater, we see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The article on Board Panda pointed out that the language that most speakers learn is a second language, English, is also the only one with a spelling system so terrible that spelling words correctly is a competition broadcast on TV.
So there aren't spelling bees for, like, Italian?
Yeah, I looked this up because I thought, not so sure you know that. And so I looked it up. There are spelling bees. I didn't stay with it long enough to know if they were televised. Yeah, there are definitely spelling bees.
Okay.
It's just a cute way of saying we have difficult spelling rules. Here's a sentence that illustrates how difficult learning English spelling can be. While I say this, picture the way the words are spelled.
All right.
Read and lead rhyme, and read and led rhyme. But read and led don't rhyme, and neither do read and lead.
Even though they're all spelled E-A-D.
All spelled exactly the same way. The difference is read and read are past, present and past, and they both mean to go through a book, right?
Right.
But led, the past tense of lead is L-E-D.
Right.
Which is, R-E-D is a color.
Right. It can be confusing.
Yeah, very confusing. Okay. All right, so let's talk about silent letters.
Okay.
What letter in the word scent is silent? As in smell. Smell.
C.
Why not S?
Well, okay, right. Because they both could, Well, because a scent, C-E-N-T, is... That word exists as a penny.
Exactly. And you pronounce it the same way
and
as
sent,
S-E-N-T.
I sent the letter is S-E-N-T.
Right.
One of them is superfluous. But we don't know which one.
Yeah, well.
That's very interesting.
That's English.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
So what word begins with a Q and is followed with four silent letters?
It is...
we had this before.
Yes, and I want to say it's Q, mm-hmm. like a line.
Yeah, and you spell it...
Q-U-E-U-E-U-E-U-E.
Great Scrabble word.
Right. You could just say Q. And you could even just get away with, C-U-E, like a pool Q.
Right, or, but if you want to be, you know... Right. Efficient, just use the Q.
Right. I'm sure in texting you do, right?
Finally, Kyle, yes. Contractions function almost identically to the full two-word phrase, okay. right? But they are appropriate only in some places in a sentence. It's one of the weird quirks of the language weave.
Our Milton grammarian is Catherine Schultz. That'll take a few minutes for some.
It does. It takes a second to pick that up.
Support comes from our Sega's Coffee Roasters and its new drive-through location at 1509 MLK. Open 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 7 days a week with a full menu of beverages and snacks made from scratch. Fall drinks include toasted sesame mocha, daily driver espresso, and salted maple caramel lattes. Our Sega's on Facebook for more.
And we are in the time of year when collegiate volleyball seasons are nearing an end and collegiate basketball seasons are just taking off. Let's do a quick review of where we stand. University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team learned last night it will open the NCAA Division II tournament against Texas A&M Commerce on December 5th. UAFS earned a 4 seed in the 64-team tournament. The Arkansas Razorback volleyball team will take a 3-game SEC winning streak into tomorrow night's match against Florida in Gainesville. Arkansas's season will then end Sunday afternoon at South Carolina. The John Brown University volleyball team ended their season last week in the semifinals of the Sooner Athletic Conference Tournament. Arkansas men's basketball remains undefeated after last night's last-second overtime win at Georgia Tech. Mason Jones banked in a three-pointer with a tenth of a second left in OT to give the Razorbacks a 62-61 victory. Arkansas will host Northern Kentucky Saturday afternoon in Bud Walton Arena at 4. The Arkansas women are in the Bahamas for the holiday week, facing Fordham Friday and Wisconsin Saturday. Arkansas lost for the first time Sunday at California. John Brown University's men's basketball team going after a 9-0 start tonight in Siloam Springs, hosting champion Christian in Bill George Arena. The JBU women next play a week from tonight, hosting Ecclesia. University of Arkansas Fort Smith basketball teams will host a doubleheader Saturday afternoon at Stubblefield Center. The women playing East Central 2, the men will play Williams Baptist at 4. Contributors to this Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, and Zuzanna Sitek. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Schultz. Our theme written and performed by Daryl Sean. Ozarks at Large, a production of 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Siloam Springs. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media. Thanks so much for listening. Over the past 9-plus years, our daily show has had many musical performances in our studios and many days. Antoinette Grajeda selects some of those performances to end our show. Today, she's picked a song by Willie Carlisle, The Little Things. He'll be part of the Last Waltz celebration that's taking place tomorrow night at George's Majestic Lounge. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Honey, I can't think of an afterlife worth living. When in your heaven, I know I ain't there. When in your heaven, I know I ain't there. And if I cry, it's for the small things. One summer spent hitching. Sweet kisses in the kitchen. If you sing, sing for the big thing hanging over our heads, that the best you've done is love. It still ends up dead. Honey, I don't know if I believe in heaven. In my head, it's always dark and bare. Honey, I can't think of an afterlife worth living. When in your heaven, I know I ain't there. When in your heaven, I know I ain't there.
when in your